Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger. And today I have the special privilege of interviewing Whitney Weiser. She is the owner of Fit Productions, which was founded in 2017. She is an Olympian IFBB bikini professional. She has competed in 30 competitions. She's a judge, an expediter, a promoter in the NPC, and has provided countless opportunities for women, support, and inspiration in this sport. Welcome to the show, Whitney.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Amy.
Yeah, I'm so honored that you're going to be a part of the show. Can you just start by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself, where you live, and things like that?
Yeah, sure. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. So I'm a Tennessee native, pretty much a Nashville native, I consider myself to be anyway. I started competing in 2009, the year that the bikini division started, and competed in 31 shows over a 10-year time frame almost. And people are always shocked to hear that for some reason. So they're like, when are you going to compete again? I'm like, I did that, a lot. They're like, wow. But yeah, I do a lot of different things now, mostly in the NPC and IFBB with the show that I promote, and all the other shows in Tennessee and other areas, just judging, expediting, helping out where I can. And then coordinating other workshops and retreats and things like that for women.
Can you tell us what the name of your competition is that you promote and the date so that we can look that up and put that on our schedules?
Definitely. So it's the NPC IFBB Pro League Nashville Fit Show. And it is going to be August 21st this year. Sandy Williamson is going to be my head judge, and it will be at the Opryland Hotel and Convention Center, which is an amazing venue. If anybody hasn't heard of it, look it up. It is gorgeous. It's huge. I'm really excited to have it there again this year.
And if I'm not mistaken, this is your first year having the IFBB as part of the show. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep, that's right. So we added IFBB Bikini Open and Bikini Masters 35 and up this year.
Awesome. And so when you founded that show, what was the inspiration or the process of what got you thinking to do this?
Oh, man, so many things. So first, I had already been judging in the sport and I was still competing, but I knew that my competing days were going to come to an end sooner rather than later at that point. And I was really kind of thinking of other ways I could be more involved in the sport, because judging is just such a small part, I feel like. And there's only a few shows in Tennessee. So I was already thinking of kind of other ways I could get involved. And then it finally kind of hit me. I was judging a show. The show doesn't exist anymore, but at the time I was judging it, and I was pretty frustrated, I'll say, with what kind of production was put on by the promoters. You could tell, like, they weren't doing it for the athletes. It was just bare minimum what they could just get away with and still have a show. And there was, like, probably one banner on the stage, and it was horrible. And I was sitting there judging these athletes that have worked weeks, months, or even years on competing and getting to the stage. And I'm like, these athletes deserve better than this. And so it became kind of a frustration and kind of a pain point for me. I'm like, this is horrible. I could do this better myself. Basically, the thoughts came across my head. And I don't know how I got the idea to specifically host a women's only show, but it kind of just developed into that kind of the more I thought about it. My goal when I created the show was to put on an amazing event to really showcase athletes, make them feel like, they're rock stars, because a lot of athletes, they won't get to the pro level and they won't get to the Olympia stage. And so this show in Tennessee might be their Olympia. And so I want to make them feel like rock stars, because I mean, as you know, the amount of work that goes into prep is insane. So I just thought they deserved better. And my goal, I had competed all over the world in different shows on the pro level, the Arnold in Australia, the Olympia, and I wanted to take all of my experiences from all of these shows and put them into everything I would have wanted as a competitor and give it to these women.
I love that. I'm in the same boat as you. I've done 30 shows in different countries, and I like to compete in almost every state just to get a feel of what the promoters do. And making a show, creating it, I felt like is one of the most gratifying experiences in the sport, just as far as making that experience for athletes. And I think that that's so critical and awesome that you saw that pain point and you addressed it. So if you were to kind of give women advice in terms of, breaking the glass ceiling, or any females that aspire to do something like this, is there any sort of advice that you would give them?
I just specifically about being a woman and doing it.
I just feel like it's tends to be a very male-dominated type of situation. So I didn't know if there was any advice that you have for females aspiring to do the same.
You're definitely right about that. Definitely a male dominated industry and a sport. And I have to say that I've never felt held back by any opportunity in life, and not in this industry either, by being a woman. I had always looked at it in a way to use it to my advantage. So I think it's really just your mindset around it. Like, you can use anything as a disadvantage or an advantage, depending on what your perspective is on it and how you use it. And so, me coming in with this and kind of thinking outside the box with an all women show, it's very, it's not common. It was actually some of the people that the higher ups that I mentioned it to were kind of like, that's not going to be successful. You're giving up, half your entry money, blah, blah, blah. All the critics come, the negativity. But the fact that I thought outside the box is the reason why the sanction got approved in the first place, is because there were so many promoters already waiting in line to have a show in Tennessee, and we already had more than enough shows for the number of athletes that we have here. But the fact that I thought outside the box and took a risk is why it got approved. And so I mean, the male versus female thing, I don't even look at it as a disadvantage. And whenever you're passionately, really, when you want something bad enough and you're passionate about it enough, you will make it happen. It's really all it comes down to.
Well, I think that that's very evident, and especially for those listeners that know your story. And can you give us a little bit of your background, in terms of your backstory with the accident and how you overcame such obstacles? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, sure. So again, when I started competing in 2009, I was just competing at a local level. And so a couple of years in 2011, I started competing on the national level stage just to see kind of how I would do. Had no expectations from it, whatever. But I started winning at Junior USAs. I won my class at Junior National, or Junior Nationals, yeah, in Chicago. And so I was really gaining a lot of momentum in the sport. And I finally thought, hey, I could probably be good at this. Maybe I could even turn pro. And so I had that momentum going for me. And then close to the end of 2011, I just ended an abusive relationship that I was in. And he wanted to come up to my job, which I worked a corporate job at the time, and he wanted to come up and talk about it. So I agreed. Went outside in the parking lot, got in his SUV, talked to him for about 5 minutes, and was basically just like, this is a toxic relationship. It's not healthy. This is, I'm done. So I got out of the vehicle and I started walking back across the parking lot to go back in to my job. And he comes at me full speed ahead with his SUV and hits me and runs me over. So the back wheel of the tire rolls over my midsection and crushes my spine. And of course, a lot more damage than that, but that was the worst of it, is crushing my spine and all of my ribs. So after that, I had to go to get emergency surgery at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, have metal rods and screws inserted into my spine, and the doctors were, they just really didn't give me an answer on anything, on like what recovery was going to be like and what I was going to be able to do. It was just, I just remember a lot of negativity and them saying, you might walk again, you definitely won't compete again, so go ahead and kind of start mentally preparing for that. And I'm telling you, when they told me these things, like, it's like it did not even register in my brain because I wasn't going to hear it. Like,
I
you can
love
have
that.
selective hearing, and I think I used it to my advantage in that situation because I was just not going to hear that. I couldn't hear that. So I went home to, I had to live with my parents after that because I couldn't walk. I couldn't even get up out of a chair by myself. So I had to relearn how to walk again. And the whole way, like, other family members were just still trying to tell me, you might not get on stage again, or you're probably not going to, just be mentally prepared for this. And I was like, I would just shut it down immediately. Like, if you don't have anything positive to say, don't say anything, because I'm gonna get back on stage. And it's like I didn't even have any doubt in my mind, because I don't think I could. Like, I needed something. I needed a form of hope to get me through. And I had to, like, there was just no other option to doubt myself. So I just started preparing as best I could. And that started by learning how to walk again, and then learning how to do any kind of weight training again and build muscle back. Like, lost everything. So build muscle back on a body that did not even function or move the same way was a learning process. And
Absolutely.
so, yeah, just it was definitely a process. And I think the biggest hurdle was just blocking out other people's negativity and doubt on what they thought I could do, or what seemed humanly possible. And yeah, that was probably the biggest obstacle.
Yeah, your mindset is so strong, and I love what you've said there. So, can you give us the details of once you just never gave up and continued on and worked your way back? What was the path then after the accident of in terms of getting pro status?
So I got back, I actually got back on stage less than a year later, which wasn't the best move, but I'm impatient. So I really pushed it probably a little bit too much, and it probably delayed my true recovery time quite a bit. But I got back on stage less than a year later. I did not place. And so I went right back to Junior USAs and Junior Nationals the following year. And where I had just won my class at both shows, I didn't even place in the top 10, or maybe not even in the top 15 in both of those. So I just started prepping again for a whole nother year. And then, so that would be 2013. And by that time, I was ready. I hit about five or six shows in 2013, and I was back top three or top five at every national level show in the country. But I would still, like, lose by getting my pro card by 1 point or one placing at every single show. And it got frustrating. It got really frustrating. But
Absolutely.
it developed a whole new level of resiliency in me. And like, that's my word. Resilient is my word. And what it means is the ability to move from setback to setback without a loss of passion or enthusiasm. Like, you just keep going no matter what happens. And that's where I was at with that. And so I got to the point, and I was like, I'm just going to keep getting on stage. They're going to get so tired of looking at me that they're just going to give me my pro card. Like, that's what's going to happen. I don't care. Oh man, but it was definitely a journey. And again, going back to, I just had to have hope, and the stage and competing was my hope to even get through, like, the darkest time in my life. And that's why I love competing, because a lot of people, I mean, anything you can use is good or bad, whatever your perspective is. A lot of people, I've heard them say, competing ruined my metabolism. It gave me all these body image issues, and it definitely can do that if your mind is not in the right place. And I went through all of those things, but it saved my life. Like, it gave me hope to continue on when I had nothing else to hope for, no other purpose besides it.
That's beautiful. So what was the show that you actually earned the pro card then?
Okay, so it was Junior USA's fourth
Okay.
time as a charm at Junior USA's in 2014. I won the top three overall and got my pro card.
Yeah, so that one's to me, other than an amateur Olympia or an Arnold, I mean, those when you have to win the overall, it can be really super disheartening for the people that win first in their class and don't get the pro card. So, what was that like winning? You had previously won your class there as well, right? Okay. So, what do you think made the difference in the overall, in earning pro status?
Just getting better, getting better. I mean, it takes so long, and I feel like I don't probably every female's like this, but it was just so hard to put on the muscle that I needed to get that lean, little not hard, but a little bit harder than your everyday bikini body, that look. And it just took a lot of consistency, and I didn't have a ton of consistency in the beginning because I didn't know, about dieting. You shouldn't gain 20 pounds or 30 pounds after your show, and then all you're worried about is getting the weight off instead of actually building muscle in the off season. And so it took a lot of learning and a lot of consistency on building the body and the look that I needed.
Okay. And then what height class were you for that?
So there was A through F then, and
Okay.
I was in class E.
Okay. So then when you earned pro status, did you turn around and do a pro debut right after that?
I did not, because I knew, even though I just got my pro card, I needed to be on a whole nother level to even be competitive at the pro level. So I took a year
Okay.
to make my pro debut at the Arnold Australia the following year in 2015.
Wow, and how'd that go?
It was amazing. Like, I couldn't even believe that I got accepted because it's invite only.
Right.
So,
Yeah.
but of course, they have to have one rookie. And so that was me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's not like I placed in the top five or anything like that. But just to be invited there and get to do it was a win for me.
Absolutely. So how long did it take you to get your Olympia qualification then? How many pro shows did you do after that?
So I and the Olympia, getting to the Olympia stage was not even really a goal that I ever had. Like, I would
Okay.
joke around and say, it would be awesome to get there. I just want one of the Olympia jackets. It would just be cool if I could get there and do that. But I had my brain and my life, it was just so programmed on go, 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 compete, compete, compete. So I ended up competing six times that first year that I was a pro. I didn't even place at any of them.
Okay.
I think I placed top 10 one time, but other than that, did not even get in the top 10, not once. And then the following year, I came in 2016. My first pro show of the year was the Muscle Mayhem in Kansas City, and I
Ah,
won the whole thing.
that's funny. I'm from Kansas City and I've competed in the Muscle Mayhem.
So I think they only had pro bikini for one year,
Yeah, I watched it.
but
Yeah, that's funny.
okay, yeah. So I come into that show and I win the whole thing after not placing like even top 10 at all the other shows the previous year, and that qualified me for the Olympia. So I always tell people, like, do not let your placing from one show to the next make or break you, because like, I'm the true testament of that. You cannot place at all and then come in. It only takes one time
Yep.
to win and get that qualification.
Oh my
So
gosh, that's so
gotta
funny.
keep going.
I was competing at an amateur that same day as an amateur.
Wow.
Yeah, that's funny. I would have It's so weird how paths cross and you don't even know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So then did you do any more pro shows between then and the Olympia, or was the next time you stepped on stage the Olympia that year?
I competed in one, I think it was just one before the Olympia, only because it was here in Nashville, Tennessee. The only other time that there was a pro bikini show here in Nashville, Tennessee,
okay,
was the Flex Lewis. And since it was in my hometown, I competed. Even though it was really tough because I had a lot of travel in between when I won and then competing at the Flex. And so it was rough. Like, I'd been to China and there's no way to stay consistent over there with what I was doing. And so it was tough to get back in shape real quick for the Flex. But then it set me up for I won't say easy prep to the Olympia, but it wasn't like hurry up and get in shape. It was like, okay, let's perfect my physique from that point on. So it was kind of nice.
So what was the coolest part about going to the Olympia and being a part of that event?
Oh my gosh. I was on cloud nine the whole time. Like, it just, nothing was going to ruin anything about that trip for me. Just walking out on the stage during prejudging, the bikini prejudging was kind of in the expo hall with tons, like thousands of people standing around watching. And so just walking out on that stage, I had the best time ever. Like, I put absolutely no pressure on myself to, you know, place or anything like that at the Olympia. I was like, if I don't get last call out, I'm good. That was my only goal. And so I did that intentionally because I wanted to enjoy this experience. I had competed so many times where I hadn't enjoyed it because I put so much pressure on myself to get a certain placing or do, you know, have a certain expectation. And I didn't do that this time. And I enjoyed it. It was the most fun I've ever had on stage.
Awesome. And have you, each time you compete, you've been in several shows and I know you're a judge yourself. Do you get feedback after everyone, and kind of what was your feedback after the Olympia?
I don't think I got feedback at that one.
Okay. Okay.
That's probably one of the only ones I didn't get feedback on, but it took me a long time to learn to get feedback after show that's like a smart thing to do. I was stubborn for most of the years in my early competing days, and I had the mindset of, I know what I need to work on. I know what my weaknesses are. I don't need to get feedback on it. Which is the wrong attitude. And when I started getting feedback and actually talking to the judges afterward, I figured out, hey, they're actually here to help me. Mm-hmm. Like, they can give other advice on how to work through things that you might be having trouble with. And they just put a different perspective on it. And I was like, wow, I should have started doing this a long time ago.
Judge, what would you say, when did you start judging? I'll start there.
I started test judging before I even turned pro in the sport. And I think I officially became a judge right around the same time as I turned pro.
Okay. So for our listeners that aren't familiar with test judging, can you explain mm-hmm. what that process looks like?
Yeah. So I think the process is similar, but it might be a little bit different from state to state or whatever district you know, you're in. But for here in Tennessee, we had it where you would have to test judge three times minimum. And one of those times had to be the Tennessee State Show. And so what you do is you just get a judge's score sheet, just like the judges, and you sit behind them and you just do, you know, judge the show essentially. And you have to score, I think it was like a 90% or higher score in line with the other judges on the panel to be considered passing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you just have to pass three times. And I even did like some extra test judging and did some mentor judging. There was somebody on the panel I actually sat with too before I judged on my own, not because I had to, but just because, I mean, I take it seriously. I wanted to know that I was good enough to score these athletes before I actually did it by myself. So I just kind of took that extra step just to make sure. And then I started judging after that.
And was that mentor Alan Sizemore, or was he?
So she's not a judge anymore. It's actually Valerie Haynes. She's a IFBB figure pro, and she was a judge at the time. She doesn't judge anymore, but yeah, I sat with her, and she was almost the best on the panel every single time. So I'm like, I want to sit with her.
Yeah. And then you also started doing expediting, correct? When did that
Yes.
transition come about?
I just started expediting, I think for the first time just last year, because I decided that I still like judging and I'll still judge when they need me to, but I like being up and moving around and with the athletes and backstage and on stage. I like being all in the middle of everything versus just sitting at a table judging them. And so it's a lot more fun for me. And I just started on stage expediting this year. But I like backstage and on stage because it's just, I feel like I'm being more helpful like throughout the whole process. I'm making the athletes feel at ease, especially the true novice class who's never been on stage before. They have no idea what to expect. And like I'm so involved in it that I know what they feel like. And so I can talk to them on a level that will kind of ease their nerves because I know what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, what they're thinking, and I can talk to them from that perspective.
And so you have a program for beginners, some modules that, can you tell us a
Yeah.
little bit about that?
Yes, definitely. So I
Okay.
just wrote an online course called Amateur Advantage this year, and it's available online because I found that I was getting a lot of the same questions from brand new competitors or people that just wanted to know more about the sport. They didn't even know if they wanted to compete yet, but it looked cool and they had no clue like where to go to get information on how to get started. And I was just finally, I was like, instead of answering these questions over and over and over again, why don't I just take everything that I know and put it into a complete package, like your guide to getting to the stage? And so that's what I did. And it covers, it doesn't cover like, it's not me being a contest prep coach because that's not what I do. So it's not specific nutrition advice and diets and training programs. It's everything else besides that, basically. So I walk you through how to even find a prep coach, what to look for, things to consider. Some people need that one-on-one in person, whereas some people don't need that. They need online is fine. They check in once a week on the phone and they're good. So just things like that to bring up that they wouldn't know to look for, and places where they can find coaches, why hiring opposing coach is important, how to pick out a suit, how to make sure you take care of your skin to have a flawless tan on stage. I go through every single aspect of competing, and it's really what I wish I would have had when I started competing, and all the things I wish I would have known earlier.
Yeah, if there was one thing to kind of that, what's your best advice then for looking for the right coach for an athlete?
Do your homework, do your research on them, talk to clients, past clients, and current clients, not just the ones that are currently with them. See how they are with their athletes. And again, it's based on needs. Like some people need that hand holding and that, 24-hour response time or less. And some people don't. Like I don't like that. I need my plan at the beginning of the week, and then I'll talk to you at the end of the week with my check-in, and we can go over it. That's how I always was. But some people need that day-to-day support. So just, do your research on coaches and talk to their past and present athletes.
Yeah, and then what would be your biggest advice for selecting opposing coach, even if they aren't somebody that's beginning? Maybe they're, a well-seasoned athlete that's trying to get their pro card.
Talk to somebody. Just because somebody is an IFBB pro does not mean that they know how to teach posing to someone else is my biggest thing on that. Or just because somebody's competed at the national level doesn't mean that they can help with posing. They know what works for their body probably, but that doesn't mean they can look at somebody else and help them. And I'm trying not to be biased when I say this. Somebody that is coaching you in any aspect of this sport has to know the judging criteria in and out completely to be able to help you. And what I found a lot of the times is even coaches, and I can't even believe that contest prep coaches do not know the judging criteria for some divisions, but they don't. And so, real life example, I had a coach. He was just starting to coach athletes, and I was the bikini girls posing coach. And so I was posing her, and he was talking about her back, and he's like, her back is just not thick enough. It needs more muscularity. And I'm like, no, her hair is going to be covering her back. She needs the overall shape from her lats, but she doesn't need that muscle depth. So don't be focusing on her lats every single day when you need to focus on other things. And he had no idea what the judging criteria was for bikini. So that's a good place to start.
I think you make a really good point, especially when people are dabbling in other sanctions and divisions. I mean, I only coach MPC and IFBB. I judge the same, and it's like you see these people not knowing exactly how to pose correctly because there's a mixture of NAMBF or OCB and things like that, and every sanction's totally different. So if you are, seeking out nutrition and training from another type of sanction, just make sure that, yes, listeners, that your posing coach, if you're competing in the NPC, you need to have you need to know what the NPC is actually looking for.
That's a good point to bring up. I'm so in deep with the NPC and IFBB. Sometimes I forget there's other organizations, but I would not know how to pose for the other organizations.
Right. And I would never say, like, I'm going to give you advice on that because, specialize, right? Okay. So I'm going to totally switch gears because I just feel like you are amazing with mindset. And I just wanted you to give any advice on how to develop the appropriate and, the right mindset when it comes to competing. And maybe if there's some daily action steps, some tangible items that you have gone through that you've noticed that has really helped with, your personal development and things like that.
Mindset, purpose, that's I love talking about that stuff. And I actually mentioned this a little bit in the course because I think it's so important before you compete, or even start a prep, really get to the root cause of why do you want to compete, really? And a lot of people, when I ask them that at first, they'll give a very superficial answer of, I just want to push my body, I want to go to the next challenge. And that's great, but why? Like, why do you want to do that? Because everybody has a story, they all have some kind of deep-rooted thing, that's their why. And you have to get to that. Because if you don't have that, you're going to quit. Competing is hard. It's not normal. Bodybuilding is an extreme sport, whether some people even realize that or not. It's not easy and it's not normal. And so if you don't have a deep-seated reason for competing, then you're not going to make it. So get to that and figure out why. And that's, I kind of help girls do that now, is figuring out, what made you decide to do this? And what I found is I also, this kind of ties into the award I give away. So now that everybody knows what I've overcome with, an abusive relationship and using competing as a purpose to get through that, what I found is a lot of people have stories, maybe not as obvious as what I went through, but everybody has something that they're trying to overcome or that they did overcome, and they just need something else, another purpose. And so getting to that is extremely important. But then what I also, on the flip side of that, competing, since it was my purpose and I wrapped my whole identity around that, when it was time to stop, I lost my identity, and it was pretty depressing, and getting through that was tough. So what I do with girls now is, let's find your why. Why are you going to compete? And hold on to that so it'll get you through. But also, you need to have something bigger than the stage. Like, what is your main purpose in your life that you want to use this competition journey for? Like, competing instills so many good character traits in people. And as you know, like, it's not a physical journey, it's a mental journey. And you develop
Right.
more discipline, more consistency, more organization, resiliency. I mean, everything on another level. And so thinking about how you're going to use that, how can you use that in your life or accomplish, what's your dream that you've always wanted or goal? What business do you want to start? And how can you use those things to fuel that too? So that's really my biggest thing is finding your purpose and really keeping your why front of mind on why you're doing everything.
Yeah, and can you share with us kind of what your mission is right now?
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's shifted throughout the years, but
It has. It's been developed and refined for sure. And so my mission is just to inspire confidence and strength among women because of what I've been through and what I've had to overcome. To me, I never want another woman to go through and experience the levels of pain that I've dealt with, physically, mentally, emotionally. And so if I can do anything, it's going to be to bring awareness to, abusive situations, insecurities that all women seem to have, and just really instill another level of confidence in them so that they can do greater things and live the life that they want to live. And I believe that fitness and competing is one avenue or way to do that.
awesome. And do you have a personal development book that you recommend, or do you have any types
So
of
many.
activities that you do to kind of get your mind set in the right place, or practices that you can share?
Gosh, there's so many good books out there. Master Your Focus is a really good one that I actually just read. But I also read a lot of Christian spiritual books because anytime, I can learn more about God and what He really wants for us in our lives, it grounds me and it gives me focus. And so I also have a mentor that I meet with. She's one of the pastors at the church that I go to. I meet with her once a week. So, and we're always reading a different book and we go through it every week. We've been doing that for years now, and that's helped develop me and grow me on a whole nother level. I also have business coaches and other entrepreneurs that I'm around. It's just iron sharpens iron. And so the more people that you can get around that have accomplished what you want to accomplish and read the books they're reading and do what they're doing in whatever aspect of life that is, that's the way to do it.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes, I couldn't agree more. And then, what would you say was the biggest lesson that bodybuilding has taught you in life?
Never give up, no matter what. Never give up. And just kind of like what I was saying earlier about not placing at six shows in a row and then winning. Like your win could be right around the corner with whether it's competing or anything in life. You have to keep going. And I think it was a quote that Babe Ruth said, it's hard to beat somebody that never gives up. And I'm like, that is the motto. That's my life. The only reason I win is because I never give up. I will never give up. And there might be other people that are better at me in a lot of things, but I'm eventually gonna win because I'm consistent and they'll get worn down. So it doesn't matter what skills you think you have or what abilities you think you have. You can always learn and grow, and consistency is just the number one thing. And that's also what bodybuilding taught me.
That's awesome. So, what would you say your absolute favorite part of living the prep life? Because I know that you said that you weren't competing, but I gather from what how you are is that you're kind of still living the lifestyle just in different ways.
Yeah, definitely. I like the discipline and the structure.
Okay.
And I constantly have to go back and forth because when I'm not being structured in even my workouts and my meals, even though I'm not getting on stage, I find that if I fall off with that, everything else suffers too. When I'm consistent with that, everything else, I'm more efficient in everything across the board.
Yes, couldn't agree more with that. So, Out of all the questions that I've asked you, was there anything that you wanted to share with the listeners that maybe we didn't chat about?
I think we covered it.
We
I
did a
think we
lot,
covered
yeah.
all the high points. Yeah.
Yeah, you
Just
had
the
some great
mindset stuff.
nuggets, for
I'm glad
sure.
that we covered the mindset and the purpose. I'm really super passionate about that. So no, I think we
Okay.
got it.
Awesome. Well, if they wanted to find you and reach out, if they had any further questions for you, or they wanted to find out more about your the competition that you promote, where
Yeah.
can we find you?
So the show website is www.nashvillefitshow.com, and everybody can find me on Instagram as well. So the show page is just at Nashville Fit Show, and then my page is at Whitney Weiser Fit on Instagram, and that's probably the best way to find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Whitney. I really appreciate it. And you can find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini. And you can apply for the team at glamgirlbikini.com. This is your founder and CEO, Amy Enger, signing off. Thanks for listening, guys.